For nature.
For the ocean.
For people.
For animals.
Hello, Sound is Planet community. Hello, everyone who's listening today. Hey, Nikki.
Hello.
I have a special friend here. Nikki is a friend of mine, a personal friend of mine, really, really cool activist. And I invited Nikki today to be in the part of the podcast because she has so many stories to tell and so many things what she saw already on the planet, what are happening. She wants to share with us. And it's really, really cool. There is written Bob Smith. This is not your name, right?
No, it's not. It's just... Oh, you know when you try and make emails and you try and find a username for your email and everything is taken, so I'm just like, Bob Smith. Oh, okay. I'm Bob Smith.
Yeah, nice. Well, this is Nikki Botha and you're from South Africa. Nikki, can you tell us a little bit about yourself? Who are you? What are you doing? Who are you?
I wear many hats. I'm a vegan chef, international catering mostly, and then I also travel the world documenting animal abuse and exposing it, and I don't know, doing a lot of media for animals. That's basically me in a nutshell. Vegan chef and documentary person.
Documentary person. I never know how to call it neither, and I make a documentary right now. But know the words, I just do it, right, like you. You did not learn to make documentaries, but you do it with your heart because you have the feeling that there is something you have to expose, right, to show the world what's happening. Do you want to tell us a little bit about the documentary you're working on right now?
Well, it's a documentary that I've been trying to get off the ground for the last 3 years. It's about the fur industry. In 2018, I went to China and I spent just short of a month undercover as a fur buyer in China. Investigating the fur trade. We went all over a lot of places in China. So we did a whole sort of round tour thing. It's not just like one specific area. We basically focus on the entire thing. And a lot of things have been exposed during the shooting and the investigation, because a lot of the footage that we took out undercover, and a lot of things have been exposed that I didn't know about. And I mean, I've been an activist for the last 15 years, and I really thought I knew everything there was to know about fur. But what you see on the internet is just, it's the tip of the iceberg. What's really going on is a completely different story. And there's a lot of what we uncovered that you can't find on the internet. And that is exactly what we're trying to expose through this documentary. But, you know, making a documentary isn't easy. There's always a lot of money involved, a lot of people involved, storylines back and forth, and it doesn't happen in a week's time. You know, these things take time. So I'm still hoping to find the funding, because I do think that this is a very important film to make, especially in the time of COVID, especially, you know, with all the food farms and everything shutting down all over the world because of the whole COVID thing. I think that it is now more than ever very, very important for people to know what the impact is of fur on the global population.
Yeah. That's a really big thing to show. And that's amazing that you do that and that you work on it. And I know for myself, it's not easy to work on a cover, to film on a cover. I have done this as well with Sea Shepherd, with other organizations and by my own, on my own. And I really have to say, this is not always just easy. Did you face some moments which have been quite tricky for you, like hard or even dangerous or something when you were filming on the cover?
Okay, well, it depends on where you film on cover. For instance, in China, it's dangerous. Very, very, very dangerous, especially what we were doing. First of all, in order to get a journalism visa or permission to shoot, you have to have a certain visa, which the government must, you know, it's a whole bunch of things. But the long and the short of it is, for our intents and purposes, we couldn't go in on a journalism visa because we were undercover. So we went in on a tourist visa. So if they found you in breach of a tourist visa, that's automatic 2-year jail term. No questions asked. Okay, so we risk that. The second thing that we risk is, because we were spying on Chinese businesses, it could have been seen as anti-Chinese. Therefore, you know, if they caught us, we could have gone to jail for a very long time, which most likely would mean they would disappear you, which means that nobody would ever see you again, nobody would know where you are, and you'd probably never see the outside of China again. Furthermore, we were dealing with wildlife traders, and that is kicking a hornet's nest. You know, you're dealing with, when you're trying to prevent people from making a lot of money, especially when it's illegal, then, you know, you're putting yourself in danger. We came across a lot of illegal stuff being sold. You know, at one point we thought that the police were in the hotel to come see us. I thought that was it. I was like, my heart, even if I think about it now, I'm getting goosebumps, but my heart was like beating out of my chest because I really thought my luck has finally run out. You know, because I do a lot of undercover investigations. And so far, touch wood, I've been very lucky. And when the police came to the hotel, I actually thought, because we were in possession of contraband, we were in possession of the pelt of an illegal, you know, protected species in China, but we had to have it because we wanted to take that pelt to Europe for DNA testing as and also as evidence. Mm-hmm. But and then we had to go to an embassy. For instance, you know, the guy that I was with, he was a French guy, and we went, you know, after we got this contraband, after we busted this illegal operation, we went to the French embassy just to, you know, to the legal attaché to find out, like, you know, what do we do from here? And she was like, get out, it can't be here, leave it, get rid of it. And she says, when you leave here, you've got to be very careful, make sure you're not being followed, da, 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 da. So even the French embassy was like, what? No, get out, we don't want it, kind of thing. Then we went to the South Africa, and everything was filmed undercover. And then we went to the South African embassy, and, you know, the French embassy was like, you know, if our French citizens are in trouble, we will help them, we will do whatever we can. So then we decided to go to the South African embassy, and I said, listen, it's a waste of time. The South African embassy is not going to help you. You know, we're not going to get any help out of them. But for the sake of the form, let's go. So I had my undercover glasses on and undercover cameras, and went in. And when we told the South African government about it, they're like, no, if you get arrested, you're on your own, we want nothing to do with you. And I said, but we have evidence of a crime, of Chinese laws being broken. Sorry, we can't get anything for you, you're on your own. As we walked out, I turned around and I said to you, listen, just for the sake of interest, this conversation that we had is confidential, right? And I said, no, we have to report it to the Chinese authorities. My heart, I'm like, I said to my friend, I said, need to get out now, let's go. So we had to get rid of the pelt. So there's a lot of stressful, you know, the entire thing was extremely stressful. It's not the same as if you had to go do it, for instance, in Canada, where, you know, the laws are being followed and there's due process and justice. In China, you know, if you break the law, it's tickets, you know, and there's so much corruption on an authoritarian level that there's no justice. There's absolutely no justice. So it's different from doing it in China than doing it in Canada. But China, the risk is constant. It's 24/7. Over and above that, I'm very, very sad to report that not only, you know, did I have to keep my composure the whole time, you know, I can't flinch when an animal is in trouble or an animal is being killed or whatever. It's completely, you know, I need to remain neutral because I can't give my cover away. So during the stress of having to keep my cover, having to keep my composure, being vigilant about, you know, the secret police following us and everything, I also had to suffer the constant verbal abuse from the activists that I was with. You know, it was just constantly breaking me down, a constant gaslighting, making me feel like I have absolutely no worth, that I'm dumb, and, you know, constantly being told how poor I am and things like that. So, you know, over and above the stressful situation, I also had to deal with abusive documentary partner who then at the end stole my work and claimed it as his own. So there's all these things that I had to contend with. So the food one was by far for me the most difficult one, but I also feel that for me it was the most important. You know, at this point I've been doing this for quite a number of years. You know, it's never easy seeing animal abuse. Like if I go to the gunny my festival and they decapitate a calf right in front of me. It's never an easy thing to see, but when they kill the dolphins in front of you, you know that you've been through that. It is really not easy to see. But you do, I think it helps knowing that you are there for a specific purpose. You know, it's not about you. This is bigger than you. And it helps to have a camera between you and, even if it's an undercover camera, it's a sort of a mental barrier between you and the cruelty that you see. So, you know, it's never easy, but you learn how to do the job to a certain degree by not, you know, overreacting and, you know, giving your position away.
Or a bigger purpose as well. I mean, in the end, like you say, you know, you You have to witness how an animal is getting killed, which is crazy. And it's never beautiful to see. It's always like heartbreaking. At the same time, you know, when you film this, you can show it to the world what is happening here, which is crime in the way it's happening, and sometimes as well endangered species. And I mean, every animal, no single one should get killed, in our opinion, right? But at the same time, you can show the world that there is a crime happening, which is bigger, so much bigger than we even know and we even understand. And that makes probably as well the hard moments for you to film this in this moment a little bit easier. It's never easy, but it makes it a little bit lighter to know, okay, at least you can do something with the footage and show it to the world and help that this is changing at some point. Yeah.
And I think it's also important for people to know that, you know, documenting animal abuse is not just about the animals, it's about humans as well. For instance, with a fur investigation, you know, there is a definite human element to it, where, you know, COVID, where there's zoonotic diseases, where there's human rights abuses within the fur and the leather industry, where, you know, all the chemicals that are put into, I think there's something like 52 different chemicals being put into the process of making fur, you know, like the dyeing and the tanning and everything. I think I speak under correction, don't quote me on this, but I think there's about 52 on average, 52 different chemicals that humans are exposed to while tanning and working with these pelts to make the final product for people to wear. And in that process itself, it's also a lot of human rights abuses. And then, as I say, you know, in the case of fur, the whole zoonotic disease, how laws aren't being enforced, environmental degradation, human rights violations. It's not just about the animal abuse. And I think, in terms of our movement, it's great that activists are focusing on the animals, but we, you know, for me, it's more important to focus. I don't want to say more important, but I do think that we need to change our strategy to focus on, to put human rights first before the animal rights. And I'll explain. Allow me to explain, because I know that's quite a controversial statement.
I know what you want to say.
Let's take the wet markets, for instance. This is for me a prime example. I first encountered a wet market in 2016 in China. And when I saw the wet market, I'm a high school graduate. I have no formal qualifications. I never went to university. I'm not a genius. I'm not super intellectual. I'm an ordinary person. And for me, as an ordinary person, I could already see when I looked at what's happening at the wet market that this is a threat to global health. This is now beyond an illegal animal being sold. It's beyond a dog being boiled alive. You know, those are obviously important issues. But if we, you know, I say to a lot of organizations that we need to change our strategy. We need to focus on getting this wet market shut down because of the threat to global health. I said we must get the World Health Organization involved to shut down the dog meat trade, to shut down the wet market, because, for instance, in the dog meat trade, a lot of these animals, a lot of the dogs that end up for consumption are diseased with distemper and other diseases, and this disease needs to disinfect to the public. Now you get your unsuspecting Western tourists going and, ooh, I'm going to try some dog meat. And they consume this diseased dog meat. Mm-hmm. And who knows, it might be zoonotic. They go out and whack, bam, thank you. Now we're sitting with a global pandemic. Yeah. So, you know, and the same with dolphin meat. You know, they're putting dangerous meat into the bodies of children, where Japan wants to put dolphin meat in school meals. Yeah. The mercury, that's exactly the same. We need to start focusing, if we want to make effective change, we need to start focusing on how this affects humans.
Yeah,
because barking up the animal cruelty tree has been done to death, you know, pardon the pun, has been done over and over again, and the public has become immune to it. But if you say to them, we must shut down meat markets, we must shut down dog meat markets, we must shut down the fur markets, because this has got global health implications.
Yes.
People will go, we need to do something about it, versus, oh, don't be cruel to the fox, the animal is suffering, which is important, make no mistake. Humans are selfish. They will go for human interest first before they go for animal interest. And therefore, I do think that we need to change, as activists, we need to change our strategy and start to look at human interests.
Yeah.
In the animal rights context, which will benefit animal rights.
when you talk about, like you said, when you say, hey, please don't kill the dolphins because we need the dolphins in the ocean and they're so nice, beautiful animals and they shouldn't be killed, blah, blah, blah. All these things, what we feel, this does not change the majority of the people because the majority of the people doesn't care that the dolphins want to live. The majority of the people want to see the dolphin show and they don't care what's happening in the background, that many thousands of dolphins are getting killed for one dolphin to be in a dolphinarium that you can watch him jumping around. So when we talk about the issue that what it is happening, it is doing to the human population as well, the global health, like you say, this is a completely other approach. It doesn't mean that the other reason is not your reason anymore, but the approach is so much different that you can reach so many more people that are really starting to listen. And that's important. So the approach is very, very big. So I completely understand what you say. And Nikki, did you have, did you have a story when you became an activist? Did you have any story which turn to you to an activist? Was there something special happening? Do you want to share this with us?
Yes. I was in corporate. So before I became an activist, I was all about corporate, climbing the corporate ladder, getting to the top. You know, I did, as I said, there was never an opportunity for me to go study like university, et cetera, et cetera. So I basically had to work my way to the top. And I was competing with people with degrees and experience and everything else. And I was no one. I came up from a personal assistant right through to the top. And I had to work double as hard because of that. And also because I was in a male-dominated industry, I needed to work triple as hard. So back in corporate, someone came to see my boss in an appointment with someone, a supplier. And she came into the office and, you know, while she was waiting for my boss to become available, because she was a little early, we started chatting. And it turned out I knew her from years before when I worked in the children's home directly after school. And then suddenly our paths crossed again. And she's like, so what are you doing this weekend? I'm like, nothing much. Why? She says, do you want to meet some really, really cool people? I'm like, yeah, okay, why not? I'm not doing anything for the weekend. And that, she told me about this boat that was kept in the harbor while detained in Cape Town Harbor, called the Farley Moat, and that was from an organization called the Sea Shepherd Conservation Society, which I've never heard before. And she explained to me what they do, they, you know, about how they preserve the ocean, blah, 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 and how they're all vegan. And, you know, at that stage, I was vegetarian, I wasn't vegan, and how they're all vegan. And because they've been detained, they don't have any food on the boat. And in return for food, the captain will give us a tour of the boat. I'm like, yeah, of course, I've got nothing better to do. This sounds like a really cool thing to do. So my husband and I went and bought a whole bunch, like literally a carload full of vegan food, and we went to deliver it to the ship. And then Alex Cornelissen is now the director of Sea Shepherd Global. He was the captain of the Farley Moat, and he's like, he took us around the boat and gave us a tour and told us about the dolphin issue, the whaling, the sealing, and all these issues I have no idea about. I'm like, what the actual? And for me, that moment was when he said he stood ankle deep. What was his word? I stood ankle deep in seal blood on the icebergs of Canada. And I'm like, this isn't right. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, after the whole tour was over, I went home. I'm like, I can't pretend that I didn't hear what I just heard. I can't just ignore it. So I went and I started Googling. And one thing led to another, and I learned about vivisection and animals and circuses and all these things that, you know, we see but we don't think about. And I'm like, okay, I can't go on with my normal life anymore. This is a game changer. I must dedicate my life to making change because I cannot stand this injustice. I cannot stand the thought of all this happening and I'm just sitting at home living my life. It just doesn't seem like it seems out of balance. And that for me was the moment I decided, right, I want to dedicate the rest of my life to affecting change.
That's amazing. Because I think that's the thing for me, it was as well one story, right? One moment which changed my life. It was a fish that I saved from a ghost net. And in the end, he came back and swam with me and looked into my eyes. And I really, this was this moment of connection and this moment where I started to think the first time about what the fuck is happening here? What are we doing? What are we people doing to the planet without thinking one second about the consequences? And I think this is the emotional thing what we sometimes have, and we forgot it. We lost it for many, many years. We just cut our connection. And when you have this one moment which touched you so much and where you see, I have to change something, when you feel this so much, I think that's mostly the moment when I talk to activists, mostly this is the moment which changed everything in your life. And then activist, right? What an activist. I got to meet you on the Faroe Islands. So we have been there together with the Sea Shepherd campaign. But you have done so many campaigns with Sea Shepherd, but as well with other organizations, and you made your own projects. What was the most important, is hard to say, but what was the campaign which was for you, like maybe even one where you really think back and think, wow, this was something big? What?
Taji, without a doubt. Yeah.
I get that.
I've done a lot of things. I've documented the dogs in Japan and Faroes. I've done the Dalimai Festival in Nepal. I've done Yulin Dog Festival a few times, more than once. But for me, Taiji will always stand out.
The people here on this podcast, they might have no idea maybe what Taiji exactly is. Can you explain a little what is the background?
Taiji is a tiny little coastal town in Japan that was made famous by an award-winning documentary, rightly so, called The Cove. And basically what The Cove is all about, it documented the dolphin hunt, which happens annually in Japan. So for 6 months of the year, from September to end of February, beginning September to end of February, you have a small group of hunters that they've got 12 boats. We call them banger boats because they've got these poles that go down into the water, which the fishermen bang on to create an acoustic wall to herd the dolphins into a bay where they slaughter them. So it's 12 of these boats that go out every morning with a permitted from 1st of September to the end of February, and they hunt dolphins. And then when they find a pod of dolphins, they herd with by banging and interfering with acoustics, and they herd these dolphins, the pod of dolphins, into a cove where they can't escape. They then net it off. They then look for dolphins for captivity. So they take some of these wild dolphins captive, and then they get thrown in pens, and then they get sold all over the world into the captive trade. And those who aren't chosen for captivity are then slaughtered for babies as well, calves as well. There's no value in life over there. But anyway, so these animals then end up on dinner plates all over Japan, and to the degree that the Japanese government wants to put dolphin meat into school lunches in Japan, which of course is worrisome because of mercury levels and all the health implications of eating dolphin meat. Mm-hmm. So that's basically what's happening in Taiji. And, you know, Taiji wasn't really my first time documenting. My first time documenting or going on a campaign assignment was the Namibian seal hunt. Mm-hmm. I think I did that 2011. Yeah, it was just before I did it. Just before I did Taiji, a few months before I did Taiji, we went into Namibia to try and get footage of the annual seal harvest or seal hunt, seal slaughter that they have over there, and that just went horribly wrong. I had to jump out of the window in the middle of the night because they sent people after us. It was just a big drama. And then after that, I did Taiji. But Taiji for me will always. I don't know, you've done Taiji. How do you describe to people that, I mean, we didn't even really see the dolphins being killed. It happens under a tar, but you can see the blood going into the water and the bodies being dragged to the butcher house.
And sometimes
it's not like where...
When the wind comes, you can see between these blue tarps.
Yes, but you don't actually, you know, like in the Faroes where they just butchered these animals. At least, but they've got a tarp, so you can hear the killing, but you can't really see the actual stabbing and everything else. You see the remnants thereof or the impact thereof.
Yeah.
But
for me, the hearing was even worse.
The hearing, yeah, you know, that slapping off the I don't even want to think about it. But you know, I've had dog blood slapping on me as dogs are being butchered. I have had calves decapitated in front of me. I've seen animals go lose their minds. I've seen a lot of things, but somehow Taiji, I don't know, Taiji stays with you. It gets into your DNA, and it's, you know, you can never let go of Taiji. It's almost like I've left a portion of myself over there that I can never get back. I don't know. As I said, you know, it's all animal cruelty. Everything that I've witnessed is really, really crap and really, really shitty. But Taiji, I don't know, Taiji just somehow sticks out above everything else. And, you know, strangely enough, that's the place where the least amount of cruelty in terms of what is the actual stabbing and the slaughtering of these animals was witnessed. So I don't know how to explain it. It's difficult to explain to people why Taiji would stand out above all else. And I think it's only people who've actually been there that could really understand.
Yeah, for me, it was, for example, when I heard how the dolphins, at the moment when the dolphins got killed, so the sound they made when they splash on the water and all that sounds and the people screaming there. And then it suddenly...
laughing while they're killing these animals. That's the worst.
But then suddenly, after a long time of this noise, it's silence.
Yes, that's silence. Oh,
so,
and you know it's over.
You know, at least these animals don't have to suffer anymore longer. So at least it's silent, at least they can leave now, but you feel that, fuck, it's really hard to hear this silence. It's hard, it was hard for me too. Well, yeah, there are many things what are crazy in this world, but there are good things too happening, right? I mean, you're working with quite some people and organizations which are caring for this planet, which are doing something good, which are changing the world. Even with food, what is your, I mean, you're a vegan chef. This is amazing. You are even, I have to say this in the Sanus Planet community, you are one of the biggest reasons why, I mean, I became vegan for many reasons, but you have been one of the biggest reasons why I was so into vegan food with such a passion, because you shared your passion for food in such a crazy way that I couldn't not become vegan. It was really beautiful. I mean, the way you are talking about food, is delicious. I mean, I start to starve when I hear you talking about food. I really want to eat.
That's how I feel about your food.
But do you want to share a little bit what you do about, I mean, you're writing a recipe book right now with some people.
I'm collaborating. I'm not writing, it's a collaboration. Yeah, it's not necessarily my recipe book. So I'm just like literally yesterday and today, I've just finished up a project where with an organization called Ubuntu Wellness. It's a nonprofit organization here in Cape Town, and they're vegan. And we're starting a plant-based diabetes reversal trial. So we've got a few, a handful of high-profile people in South Africa who will be participating in a 21-day plant-based diabetes trial. And basically, you know, all the food that you can't eat as a diabetic, but also cooking without oil. And we've got this trial group, let's call it an experimental group, And the recipe book that we made was all recipes, original recipes that will fit within, you know, cooking without oil which would fit into the diabetic lifestyle. But for me, what was very important about this project is I come from South Africa, where there's a huge disparity between wealth and poverty, and where the majority of people living in poverty are people of color. And that makes up a very, very large population of our population living underneath the bread line. And these are people that can't afford healthcare. So, they can't afford to be. Apparently, they can't afford to be healthy, because veganism is so expensive and elitist. And we want to bring back the sort of whole African cuisine, the celebration of plant-based and African cuisine, because, you know, something that I personally believe, okay, and this is not the opinion of the organization, this is my opinion, is that eating meat is a relic of colonialism. Because if you look at our indigenous people, or even indigenous people worldwide, meat consumption wasn't a regular thing. It wasn't done on a daily basis. In African culture, animals were revered because they were used as currency. So an animal was only ever slaughtered for ceremonial purposes, like a wedding or a coming of age or a funeral or whatever. Meat wasn't consumed breakfast, dinner, lunch, and in between. Come the white people into Africa, they colonialize Africa, and suddenly it's all potatoes and meat, chicken, meat, potato, chicken, you know, very, very unhealthy. So we're keeping a large portion of South African population very unhealthy. Mm-hmm. And these are the people who can't afford healthcare. So we want to alleviate the financial burden on the government's healthcare system, as well as on people, as well as on individuals. So all the recipes that we have come from people of color, They gave us those recipes. We went to them and said, listen, can you please give us recipes? And they did. So every single recipe in the book was made, made by a person of color. We gave some space for their voices, why as the black person it is important to be plant-based, you know, the health benefits, the cultural benefits, everything else. And that entire collaboration is being put into a book, and that book will be used in the diabetic trial. So what after 21 days, you know, obviously there's medical screening and everything else. And after 21 days, we want to look at the results. If the results are good and it shows that through plant-based diet, you can reduce diabetes, which we know that it will, we are then going to take that program into the public with the support of the government. So we can get our population healthy, so we can take them back to their roots and dispel this whole notion of veganism being a white, expensive, elitist thing, which it isn't. We as white people, I feel, co-opted the whole notion of plant-based, which for me originated with indigenous people. And we as white people, colonizers, just completely obliterated that. And food apartheid is a very, very, very real thing, and it's very damaging. And we need to get our population healthy. And we, the only way to do this is through plant-based. So we're hoping that through this program, we can prove that, you know, eating meat is expensive, not only immediately in your wallet, but also long-term in terms of healthcare. The meals that we got come in for each meal, come in on average under €1. So you get a full, balanced, nutritious meal for under €1.
That's crazy, huh?
Tell me again how veganism is white and expensive. Oh. So that's one of my big passion projects, is getting vegan and plant-based back into the community that have people of color, so they can go back to their roots and get rid of this colonial bullshit that you have to eat meat in order to be a healthy human being, when it's exactly the opposite.
Yes, exactly. I don't know. It's kind of a long story where these beliefs came into our belief system. And it's like when you live it and you pass it on and on and on to the next generations, it's like so much into our in our blood. Like we feel we need to eat meat to be healthy. We need to drink milk to be have strong bones. And in the end, like so many studies which show completely the opposite. And it's like interesting how much we hold on these old beliefs, because we feel like this is part of our culture and this is tradition and we need to hold on it. Tradition is a big word, huh? I mean, there are beautiful traditions on this world. There are beautiful ones, and yeah, hold on them, but they are so shitty traditions too. And if traditions from the past are stealing the future of our children, then I think it's the moment when we should let go of them. And I think that we really have to start to consider this, that a lot of traditions are just killing and destroying this planet. And I think it's more important to think about that, what we are doing out there to the planet, than to really be stubborn and hold on these traditions. But it's a big thing. Tradition is quite a big thing, yeah. Do you, when you...
Especially in African culture, you know, or indigenous cultures, you know, their whole traditional culture, it's very here because it's part of the identity. But I also think that, you know, you have a choice at the end of the day. Tradition and culture is fine. I have no problem with it. But at the end of the day, it's not something that you have to do because someone's holding a gun to your head. You have a choice. Like, for instance, you know, in white culture, it's traditional to eat turkey at Christmas. I choose, even though it's part of my traditional culture, call it whatever it is that you want, I choose not to partake in that. I don't have to because it's culture and tradition. I have a choice. And a lot of people fall back on that excuse of our tradition, it's culture, to give themselves an out, to stay in their comfort zone, to continue that cycle of what they used to, eating animals and staying unhealthy. And I think the best way to actually change people's minds is to show them. So here's your recipe for 21 days. Tell me how you feel after this. You feel good? Great, we've shown you. I can tell you, hey, Maggie, you must stop eating meat because it's unhealthy. It causes blah, 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 blah.
I have a problem.
Yeah, okay. In the one ear, out the other. But if I showed you, Maggie, how do you feel after 21 days? And said, I've never felt better. I show you the chances of you sticking to your new habits will be far greater success than me telling you, Maggie, you need to stop eating meat because it's unhealthy, it ruins the environment, and it's cruel to animals.
Exactly. Exactly. Totally. So this is, again, the same thing like we talked before. It needs a different approach, right? It's awesome. Hey, when we talk about recipes, do you want to share one recipe with the community? And so we put it in the show notes. One of your recipes, whatever.
Yes, I can give you. I've got two very nice recipes. The one is an African peanuts and bean. Peanut and tofu. So it's as long as a protein, like a bean or a tofu, but it's basically spinach in a peanut sauce with tofu or beans that you then serve on rice. And then the other one is a traditional South African babua tea, which is usually made with minced up animals. Let's call them minced up animals, not meat, because that's what it is, minced up animals. Mm-hmm. And I do it either with lentils or with soy mince or with both. Mm-hmm. And I will give you the links to the recipes, or I'll give you the recipes after this so you can give it to the community so they can have a little bit of a flavor of Africa and South Africa.
Yeah, amazing. And the community can even make me write a comment then afterwards when they tried it out.
I'd love to hear what they think.
That's amazing thing. Yeah, cool. And share it with other people as well. That's really important. Really cool.
Yes.
That's what I think. And when I became vegan first, before I was vegan, I was as well thinking like, that's a bit extreme. Huh? It goes very far. And to completely cut out all the animal products, I did not have any clue what it means. Huh? And then I myself consider this as extreme. And when I started to think about it and what is behind my normal and daily food choice, what I had before, nowadays, I think that's quite extreme because I didn't give anything at all. I did not ask, I did not question. Now I know what is behind and how many things are connected to how the world looks like and what we do to animals and to living beings and how we treat them. And then I think really this is kind of extreme not to think about it. But everyone has to take their own choice. And in the end, what we can do is like showing, like you said, showing it is possible. You have a choice. That's the most important thing. You can choose in every single second if you want to participate in this or not. But in order to choose, you need to first see. You need to start to feel and to understand and to listen. If we are blocking ourselves, we can't, because then we always take the choices from our surroundings because we just follow blind. But we need to open ourselves, to ask questions, to look behind the scenes and to get the knowledge about the background and all these things. And then we can choose.
It's also about, you know, I always say to people, if you look at I want to say normal eating, the eating of animals, what the larger public does, that's what I mean by normal. It's a product of violence. Everybody always tells you, you are what you eat. Great. I believe that as well. If you eat healthy, you are healthy. Now, follow this reasoning. What is a dead animal? A piece of meat is a dead animal. How did that animal get dead? Through violence, exploitation, torture, pain, and suffering. Guess what you are putting in your body? Mm-hmm. Those five elements. If we are what we eat and we are consuming products of violence, exploitation, is it anyone that, number one, that our bodies react violently with things like diabetes, clogged arteries, heart diseases, and the list goes on. And B, whether, you know, our spiritual health and the way that we act towards other, you know, the way we treat animals is scientifically used as a precursor for future crime. Like, for instance, the FBI, when they look at criminal trends or, you know, serial killers and things like that, the first thing they ask is, well, one of the first things they look at is, did the person at any point torture and abuse animals? If you look at domestic violence situations, very often it's the animal first that gets it before the woman and the children gets it. So not only is our body reacting violently in terms of the diseases because we're putting that product into our body, but that also manifests in our behavior. We are normalizing violence simply by putting the wrong product at the end of our fork.
Yeah.
So here we have a fork with a piece of meat, consuming it that moment, you know, babies, let's look at babies. Babies, for instance, they're born vegan. I say vegan, mother's milk. Yeah. But once they start weaning, we are the first, the parent is the first person to give the child an animal product to eat. They're not born immediately coming out of the womb starting to chow on the mother's boob. You know what I mean? They don't start grabbing, you know, eating the mother's boob, the flesh, and they're drinking the milk. So then we start them off on vegetables, pureed vegetables. and then eventually graduates to me. But the moment you see your child as animal product, you are normalizing violence. Mm-hmm. And that is the kind of adult that you then send into the world. Mm-hmm. Somebody who thinks violence is normalized, somebody who eats and consumes a product of violence, and that then manifests in the behavior towards others. I really do believe, Maggie, I really do believe that if everybody goes vegan, that the crime rate and the violence rate will drop.
Crazy.
Absolutely, without a doubt. I mean, I would love for studies to be done about that. You know, take a community that was ravaged with crime, put them on a vegan diet for a year, and then look at the crime trends.
Yeah, I think so. It's based on empathy. It's like,
and also, you know, this is another way that human rights and animal rights intersect. If we look at seal clubbing, for instance, in Namibia, you know, the people who are actually clubbing these baby seals to death are indigent people who get paid below the bread line per day. Mm. So it's not easy to club a baby, take a piece of plank and hit a baby seal to death while the mother, it's traumatic. They don't get any counseling, okay? Mm. That thing, you know, this trauma leads to substance abuse. Substance abuse leads to violence in the community, you know, at home. Mm-hmm. Violence in the community is broader, and that spills over and makes the community unhealthy.
Yeah.
Right? If those people went and they farmed, rather they farmed spinach, they worked on plants the whole day, and they go home, I don't think they would, you know, obviously now, you know, afterwards it's difficult to get rid of an addiction like alcoholism, but if that was never there, if it was never a case of I never cut the baby seal to death, therefore I don't have PTSD, therefore I don't do substance abuse. If it was a case of right from the start of I'm growing spinach and basil and apples, I think, I'm not saying that it will completely eradicate, you know, human violence upon human violence, but I do think that the instances will go down. And with eating plant-based, you might go vegan for or plant-based for your health or environment, but one thing leads to another. You start to learn a lot more about why it is that to the environment or your health, or what have you. And it starts to think, you know what, I won't go to an animal circus, or I think I won't buy fur anymore. That kind of thing. It's sort of a ripple effect. So even though you go plant based for your health or for the environment, eventually it then goes into a vegan lifestyle. Now, for me, there's a difference between plant-based and vegan. Vegan is an entire philosophy. You know, plant-based does not necessarily help dolphins in dolphinariums or backyard breeders or so. That's more veganism. But I do believe that plant-based can eventually go into veganism. And that can then help lower the violence in communities.
Yeah.
There's another thing. You know, just another point here. Is there was a study done. I got it somewhere on one of my laptops. A study done where they opened slaughterhouses in a community, and from the start of the slaughterhouses, crime steadily started to increase.
Mm.
So the mere presence of an abattoir in a community can push up violence and crime.
Yeah, I totally agree with you.
The mere presence.
Yeah,
I want to see that same kind of violence in the community with an edible garden.
Mm. Yeah,
exactly. You know what I mean?
Yeah, completely. I totally.
So that's again how veganism and human rights intersect. So many points where they intersect. We can go on with this conversation for a week and not even reach the tip of the iceberg.
I mean, I could talk to you anyway for a week without stopping because we have so many things.
Right?
Yeah, it's completely, it's crazy. But we have to come a little bit slower to the end of this podcast today. We will maybe make another one another time. It would be amazing. But I have a...
I love talking to you.
What?
I love talking to you.
Me too. To you, not to myself. I have a question for you. First of all, when, you know, some people say... You will probably know this sentence, for sure you know that sentence. I hear it many times, not so much anymore like at the beginning when I turned into an activist, but many people say all the time, hey, you can't make a difference. Just because you change something, it doesn't change anything. And you alone, but you won't change the world. What do you say to the people who say this? What is your answer? Is already like this.
Change. Okay. Change was always started by someone.
Yeah.
Change always starts with someone. Yes. Further to that, if we look at all the historical changes in history, it's made started by one person who grew into a movement. If we look at Jesus, Jesus was one person. If we look at Hitler, it's not a positive thing, but it's an example. One person. If we look at Gandhi, one person. If we look at all the historical people, it might have been a movement, but it started with someone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's none of those people were born under like stars that were stroked by the hands of virgins. They're all normal people. Normal people who at birth didn't know that that was going to be their destiny. So why not you? What makes you so special that you're that unspecial?
Yes. Nice. That's a good one. That's a good one. Yeah, totally. I mean, well, I'm working on my documentary too. It's about hope. And it's trying to show hope from different perspectives, even when you lose it, what happens when you lose hope and how can you find it? How can you be part of it? How can you be hope? And it's about people and organizations who care for the planet. And when I interviewed quite a lot already, and I want to interview more, and then I see how I put all together. But when I interview the people, then I really see like even people which have started a big foundation, then people believe, yeah, yeah, but she has a big foundation. Well, but when she started, she was exactly like we here now, one person with sometimes nothing more than, I don't know, a package of rice, not much money, right. You know, like, but the heart was so big, burning for something and for change to come and to be the change that these people started.
Yeah.
And they created something really big at some point, but sometimes something small and they keep on going with the small way. Doesn't matter. But the change is your choice. And that's what I really want to show with this movie. Yeah. You don't have to make a big organization, but you can choose if you want to be part of this or this. It's your choice. It's up to you. And yeah, that's an amazing answer. Thank you, Nikki.
And I think, thank you.
Well, the last question for today for this podcast is, If you can, you have the possibility now to reach all the Sanos Planet community with your message, the biggest message you want to share right now in this moment, what would it be in 2-3 sentences? What is your heart telling us right now?
Stop lying to yourself. Stop lying to yourself that you can't go vegan. Stop lying to yourself that you can't make change. Stop lying to yourself that you're not worthy. Stop lying to yourself. That for me is the most important message. Doesn't matter whether it is environmentalism or human rights or animal rights or personal mental health. Stop lying to yourself. Stop making excuses to keep you in your comfort zone.
Yes, that's good. Going out of the comfort zone is a beautiful thing. I mean, it might be.
Oh, man, that's where all the adventure is.
What?
That's where life starts, man.
What? I think so, too. I mean, if people never want to have any change and experience any change, then they should think about, will I stay forever? Exactly how it is right now. This wouldn't it be boring at some point? Go out of it.
I feel such tremendous pity and sorrow for people who say, well, this is my little comfort zone. I'm going to stick in it.
Hmm.
You're wasting your life. Outside of that comfort zone is where all the magic is. It might seem daunting because you don't know what it is, and you know, people naturally fear that which they don't know. But man, you take that first leap, babe, it's the best roller coaster ride you will ever get to go on.
Yeah.
Really, it has changed my life in so many ways that I stopped counting. It changed me as a person, and I really, really like who I am as a person today.
Mm. Yeah.
Yes, I'm my baby in green. I say that and she comes in going, meow.
Yes, I think she likes you too, how you are the person you are today.
Well, no, you're not going to sleep on the keyboard, Baba.
Thank you, Nikki.
No, she wants to sleep on the computer.
Thank you, Nikki, so much for sharing everything you shared with us today. Thank you for all the work you do. Is there a way that we can put some stuff in the show notes? how people can support as well your project or something what you are working on or some organization you are working with. If you want, send us all the links. We will put everything you want in the show notes and as well the recipe, the vegan recipes you want to share. That's really cool. And is there something I forgot? Is there anything you want to still tell us? A story, something I did not
ask? No. And you want to know why? Because that just means if there is something, you have to ask me to talk to you again.
Nice. Yeah, we will definitely meet again. Hey, I really can't wait to meet you again. And so much and say from the Sounders Planet community, thank you for everything you do. It's amazing and go on with it. And you're amazing, Nikki. Thank you so much.
Not as amazing as you.
Nikki, bye. Have a great day.
Lots of love to you, Maggie. And thank you for having me. And let's do this again because I love talking to you.
Yeah, it's awesome. And thank you, Sounders Planet community, for listening. Thank you all.
Yes.
Today.
Yes. Thanks, Max.
Bye-bye.